Blog Talk Radio. Good evening, everyone, to the Wise Women Media Radio Show. We want to thank our sponsors, Here Be Monsters, Daughters of Isis, Roundtree 7, and the Hoodoo Blog. And I'm very pleased to announce that we have Sandy Oestreich with us. She's been working on the Equal Rights Amendment for a very long time. I want to give you all her contact information before we even start the show, so you all have it and you can contact her. Her website is www.2passera.org. And you can also reach it by going to www.ratifyeraflorida.net. So you'll find the website there as well. So Sandy Oestreich, pleased to have you on the show, and thank you for joining us tonight.
I'm just thrilled, Thanks for having me, Anita.
And I wanted to tell you all a little bit about what Sandy has done so far, and she'll fill us in with all the details. She's the founder and president of the Equal Rights Alliance Incorporated and the Equal Rights Amendment Education Incorporated. She's a professor emerita of Adelphi University in New York. She's a former elected official. She's a co-author of internationally distributed pharmacology reference texts. She's a nurse practitioner. She's biographied in Feminists Who Changed America. And, of course, the most important thing, she's a wife and a mother. So, Sandy, tell us a little bit about yourself and how this became your most important cause to date, and how long you've worked on this, the Equal Rights Amendment, and just fill us in with some of the details.
Yeah, well, a lot of people know about the Equal Rights Amendment being reignited, but a lot don't. And that's why I'm delighted to be here with you tonight to illuminate some of this for people who didn't know. In fact, 72% of the nation believed that it passed wrongly. The ERA, Equal Rights Amendment, did not pass by just three states. We had all the states and three states flipped, so that we need 38 and we have 35 and we're seeking three more states. That's all it does, put women in the Constitution. Let me just tell you what the ERA says. The body of the ERA, the Equal Rights Amendment, that was passed out of Congress in 1972 and written, actually, in 1943 by Alice Paul, says, equality under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex or gender. And it's a simple moral fundamental right of all Americans. It's our birthrights. And it, the basic action that it promotes is the making of sex discrimination, either sex, either gender, a violation of the U.S. Constitution as soon as the Equal Rights Amendment passes into the Constitution. As it stands now, sex discrimination is, well, it is a violation of law, but it is ignored, and there are laws like, for example, the strongest one, which is very weak, the Equal Pay Act of 1964. It is ignored, and that's why the women in Florida average only 72% of a man's salary for the same job. 72% women. So if you don't like that, you need to stand up and say so. It's not enough to just say, oh, well, yeah, that's the way it is. Well, no, that can't fly. America is supposed to be an advanced nation, and we are more and more becoming a banana republic, as you may have noticed from the implications of the political climate these days. So anyway, the Equal Rights Amendment is still alive. It's still out there. And my two corporations and I work very hard, 18 hours a day, 7 days a week for the past 12 years for free for you in order that this changes and the ERA actually gets put in the U.S. Constitution. What makes it so important, really, to you in a very practical way, is that women are not mentioned in the nation's contract with its people, the Constitution. Women, females, girls, women, none of those are mentioned in the U.S. Constitution, and yet men are mentioned, male, men, him, are mentioned 39 times. We actually have no contract with our nation. And the thing that disturbs me and has disturbed me for 12 years now is that particularly the young ladies that I speak to, I speak everywhere in the Southeast, throughout Florida and in D.C., the young women have often tossed their heads saying, well, you know, we may not be in the contract, but they'll never remove any of our rights. Well, if somebody else has control over your rights, they're going to try to do it, and guess what? It's here. If you have been following the news, you know very well that contraception is very much under the gun right now. You never thought we'd lose contraception, but we're very close to losing the right to prevent conception in our country. And there are many ramifications to that. But most of all, it is an abrogation of our self-determination and a right to full personhood. And if that doesn't make you mad, hang on, because I'm going to make you madder. So, Anita, do you have anything to interrupt with? Or do you have a caller? Or
I had a couple things I wanted to mention. You were talking about contraception. And
yeah.
I was on a radio show just last night, as a matter of fact. And it was quite interesting because we were discussing exactly the issues, you know, the war against women. And one of the things that was mentioned was that doulas and midwives are thinking or have been learning how to perform abortions. And there's a big movement to teach this and to learn it, because eventually women will lose this right if we continue along this same path. I was shocked by that, being a licensed medical professional. I thought, wow, that's pretty amazing. But when I was
a little bit more about that, Anita, because my last understanding of that, and I was involved in that movement, which started about 4 years ago, and it was to teach professional nurses. I didn't hear anything about midwives. There are nurse midwives that are licensed and certified, and there are what we call lay midwives. And I was active in that campaign to assure that the high school graduates who espouse to be lay midwives at least had the training and had to be licensed. So I didn't know that midwives were involved in this, but in the mid-level professionals doing abortions. But my understanding is it's not the surgical abortions they do, but the prescription of the RU486, the medical abortion pill. And I don't, has that changed? If you were on the show, can you elucidate a little bit?
Changed, but the point that I made on the show is that if licensed people are not performing this procedure, or if there is no way to find out if somebody's licensed, and women are desperate, I mean, just because the law changes doesn't mean the women are going to stop seeking out abortions when they need them. Desperate women will do desperate things. And we will be back to the dark ages. We'll be back down to the dark alleyway type abortions.
And the death.
And that would be very dangerous for women, because deaths will result from that. Scary thing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and they are tightening the rules wherever you look, whether besides the fact that it's the law of the land now, through the Supreme Court decision in 1972, so it should be a settled matter, but they keep bringing it up for political reasons. It's such irony to me, such cruel irony, that we're having a presidential election, and the candidates that I've been hearing, of course, are the Republican candidates, and their big upsetment to them, very disturbing and concerning. The only thing that seems to be concerning them is women's overweening rights to their own bodies and to their self, their personhood and self-determination. Now, ERA does not have anything to do with what we're talking about, incidentally, directly with regard to abortion or contraception. But my fight now is that I recognize, and there's a small distinction here, and I hope the audience can weave their way through what I'm about to say. It's a little bit convoluted, but we are not involved in the abortion question or contraception question. What I am absolutely irate about is the taking away, the stealing of women's rights to full personhood and self-determination in all areas, and this is just one more. So I'm poking my nose in there. But again, these are not regulated, although you'll hear it everywhere. The anti-ERA ladies in the Eagle Forum, Phyllis Schlafly, is still saying that horrible things like her minions come out and give testimony when I do at the Capitol. And the last thing they said was, one of Phyllis Schlafly's followers stood and gave testimony that if we had an equal rights amendment, that all teenagers would become prostitutes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it's that kind of rhetoric. But, you know, the public's so much smarter now than they were in the 70s and 80s about such things. I don't think they're swallowing it. But nonetheless, they do speak up. And, frankly, I get great joy about them coming and saying these ridiculous things every time we have testimony given about the Equal Rights Amendment, because they look so foolish. I actually go up to them and thank them heartily for coming and speaking.
Yeah, because they stick their foot in their feet right. in their mouths, proverbially.
Right.
I mean, it's really the other thing that I wanted to, that was actually crossing my mind as you were speaking, and you were talking about equal pay. And one of the most recent things that we remember under Obama's current administration is the Lilly Ledbetter Law. What exactly did the Lilly Ledbetter Law do?
Okay, so it wasn't a law. It was a
people are clear on that.
Yeah, and they ought to know that. I run across a great many women who didn't follow the case at all and did not know what happened to Lilly Ledbetter in Gadsden, Alabama. I'm pretty sure it was Gadsden, Alabama. She was working for Michelin Tires for some 29 years, an employee. And one day someone slipped a note into her lunchbox saying, did you know that you are underpaid by, you know, I'm not exactly sure what the note said, but it indicated that she was underpaid by a large percentage as compared to the men around her doing the same job. So she took it to management, and management pretty much said, well, you didn't tell us right away, so, you know, that's the way it is, honey. So she got her ire up and went all the way up to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court did not rule in her favor, did not rule in the rest of our favor. They did tell her that the decision of the Supreme Court, which, as you know, is 5-9, five of the Supreme Court justices really want to make us invisible as females. It's quite apparent. But they did say that, you know, okay, you didn't let employer know immediately that your paycheck was different from the men sitting next to you. Well, number one, I think she had to sign a waiver at the beginning, like many of us do when we apply, that we won't talk salary with our cohorts at work. So
yeah, it's like a no-talk clause or a competition clause, I think they call it.
Well, no, it's not a non-compete clause. That's a little bit different, but you do have to swear to certain things. And some of them are pretty extreme, but that's very extreme. And it does keep everybody close-mouthed. Well, of course, she didn't know for 29 years. So how could she have notified her employer, as they're now saying, requiring? And so the Supreme Court said, too bad. You know, it's just too bad, Lilly Ledbetter. That's the way it is. You should have let them know right away. And believe it or not, the Supreme Court did decide that. So Lilly Ledbetter went away without remedy for her many years. Back pay, nothing she got out of that. And it is now the law of the land, according to that particular precedent set by the Supreme Court. What was it? It was the very first thing in President Obama's administration. He signed the Lilly Ledbetter Act that would remove that prescription. But the Supreme Court did say, you have 180 days, you ladies out there. I don't care what you sign, that you will not discuss it. You must know what you make as compared to your male cohorts. And if it's not equivalent, then you must let the employer know within 180 days. Well, it's a rock and a hard place. And the climate is a rock and a hard place.
When you're on the job, are you supposed to go up to your male counterpart and ask him what he's making? How are you supposed to find out?
Yes.
And then again, if you do find out something, how do you know if it's the truth?
Yes, that's also true. I mean, we are so disadvantaged. We're behind the eight ball in so many ways. We are kept blind, deaf, and dumb. And I don't mean in the stupid sense. I mean uninformed. I am appalled at the young women when I speak before college classes. I always tell them, look at the guy sitting near you, the next to you. You're about to graduate. I usually talk to seniors. You're about to graduate. When he gets a job in, let's say, journalism, and you both have the same job, he will make, 28% more than you do for starters. And, you know, you may not think that's a big deal right now. You might say, well, I don't have enough gas in my car, or I can't pay my rent always on time. But worse than that, it puts one out of seven elderly women in poverty. And the further irony to that, I mean, that's callous and cruel enough. But the big irony is that you and I, this sounds callous, but if you look at it from the money standpoint, you and I, as taxpayers, and state funding has to come into play to make up the difference for those ladies who are elderly and in poverty. Medicare, food stamps,
Talk about the young women that are in poverty and
yes.
single mothers. And here I am, an elected official. I just spent 4.5 months of unemployment with no social programs to help me in my 50s. So this is
still in office, Anita?
Pardon? I'm still in office, but I don't get paid for that. I don't even get a stipend. My issue. Unemployment, not eligible for unemployment, not eligible for food stamps. I don't know who determined that, but all I know is, as a woman, I don't know what can be done to help other women. And I'm just very grateful that as of today, I worked a new job for the first time today.
Yeah.
But, spent 4.5 months of total unemployment with no social programs. So this is happening. When this happens to a single mother, I mean, this is catastrophic.
It is.
I mean, this is just horrible. So we can talk about it across the board and how it's affecting You know, I really believe the numbers for the unemployment are, at this point in time, are convoluted anyway. They're probably closer to 20 to 25% because I can tell you probably one out of every four people I speak with, they're either looking for a job, unemployed, or underemployed.
And homeless, maybe. Yeah.
And a lot of them are homeless. And what's happening even more serious is, and this is a fact, in the county that I live in, there are people living in the woods in tents because they're afraid that their children will be taken away from them through DCS.
Oh,
so
oh my.
There
you
is
mean they've moved out of their homes?
Well, they've lost their homes, or they can't pay their rent, or whatever
is
happening.
I know this happened in Naples because I had heard about it. I was called upon to speak in Naples. In fact, I spent 2 weeks there and spoke 14 times down there in the 2 weeks. But I was informed before I left that if I were coming to speak, I had to bring 2 jars of peanut butter for the children living in the woods. And as I drove by on my way to Naples from St. Pete, I saw that through the bushes, I could see encampments there, people living in the woods. We are in desperate straits. And the irony, but not so cruel, but the irony is these legislators who are legislating this in Florida, I mean, we're one of the most rabid anti-women states now. No holds barred. The veil has been drawn up, open, and we are seeing into their hearts, and we see them being anti-women. Now, how is it that they can collaborate with their colleagues sitting in the legislature with them who are women, or consider Hillary Clinton, who was running to be in the White House, and she wasn't in the Constitution? What kind of it's not just irony, it's shocking. It's just shocking. And I plan to bring that up. We do speak before, I do arrange for speakers, one in every county every fall before the legislative delegation in each county. And I'm sure Anita knows what a legislative delegation is. I didn't, and many don't. It's every county in Florida. The legislators that you send to Tallahassee from each county every year holds meetings that you can go to, and I would suggest you find out about them by calling your legislator and showing up there. All of the audience is listening, and you can speak for 3 minutes. I often feel like it's the peons petitioning the king. It's that kind of atmosphere.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to say, but it is. And we have been doing that for years, so we're staying in the face of legislators for the Equal Rights Amendment. And I do have to say, before I go much further, that we have had for the past 10 years 2 bills before the Florida legislature consistently, annually, to ratify or have the legislature vote for the Equal Rights Amendment in Florida as one of the 3 states that we still need to pass the Equal Rights Amendment into the Constitution. All we need is 3 states, and it goes in automatically. It doesn't have to go.
I wanted to give people the stats on where Florida stands with the ERA right now. Florida, whose head of representatives voted to ratify the ERA on March 24th, 1972, with a tally of 91-4, a second time on April 10th, 1975, with a tally of 62-58. It was close there. A third time on May 17th, 1979, with a tally of 66-53. And a fourth time on June 21st, 1982, with a tally of 60-58, 2 votes apart.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that is just some incredible close numbers. What are the other 2 states that should be added to Florida that we need?
It's a little different from that. As I said, 38 were needed, and 35 did ratify. We had all the states, but the men flipped in several states. In those days, you had very few women anywhere in Congress. Now we have a big 17%. We need 30% to make the big difference that that this would bring about, the ERA. But meanwhile, we have to get three more states, but we could take any of the 15 that never ratified could step forward. But we're working with seven states that file bills every year routinely. So there are seven states, and Florida's at the forefront because we've been working very, very hard, and we have bills in both houses. The other active states, very active, I'll put them in the order activity, I guess, or guts probably is more like it. Illinois has not ratified, and they routinely file bills. We know all of the leaders in those states, and we work together. But Illinois would have passed it long ago if they weren't one of the few states that requires a two-thirds majority, I think it is, in their state as this. Every other state just requires a simple majority, not 66%, but 51%. And so they would have ratified long ago. So they've got the numbers for 51%, but not for 63%. So that's Illinois. Louisiana's working particularly hard. And Arkansas is close. And I'm very proud to tell you that one state that I have mentored very closely from the very beginning, Virginia, has just passed the ERA through the Senate in their state for the second year.
Oh, wow, good.
Year. Yes, yes, good. And we've all written to the House. They don't have a House of Representatives. They have assemblies. Assembly in Virginia, and the chair of the Committee of First Reference in their assembly has decided that it's just a political ploy and he's not going to hear it. This is what happens in Florida. The House won't hear it, has never held a hearing on the ERA, and if it's not heard, of course, can't get voted on. But it keeps getting passed out of Senate committee, but it can't move because our House doesn't do it. So the same thing is happening in the Assembly of Virginia. And I don't have an update on it because my friend who I mentored and is running Virginia is much too busy right now, because right away after it passed the Senate, and it was tenuous as to whether their Assembly would hear it, although we thought it would not, they put forth the resolution or bill that they would require a transvaginal ultrasound before an abortion. So she's busy on many fronts, and I haven't heard from her, which is quite understandable. The first state who passes the ERA, it will break the gridlock, we're pretty certain, and we can all flood to the next states and get them done. But we have to have a breakthrough, and we have to have women standing up on their hind legs and saying, we demand our birthrights.
Exactly.
We cannot be sitting on the couch. We have to start standing up.
I wanted to let people know that if you go to Wikipedia and put in Equal Rights Amendment, you're going to pull up a nice long history of the amendment itself, but it has a really good map of the United States of America. It depicts the states that have ratified they're all colored like a coral color. Ratified then rescinded are depicted
I just have to, if I can't stand another word of it. Wikipedia is edited by anyone who wants to. And I have edited that particular section, but Phyllis Schlafly has edited it, and there are inaccuracies in it and her own opinions in it. And so I guide people away from Wikipedia if I can, because it's totally inaccurate now, No state ever rescinded the Equal Rights Amendment. No state ever did it. There were five states who attempted to, wanted to, thought they wanted to, and there is no provision for rescinding an amendment to the U.S. Constitution once you've voted for it. Article 5 of the Constitution makes no provision for doing it, and there are several provisions against changing it. Now, how can you have an amendment to the Constitution, a very grave, serious decision, and then tomorrow say, oh, I changed my mind? You know, you can't have equality one day and not the next. It's just...
So is there any map online that would actually depict the status
of... No.
Let me just say,
on my own website, you will find a map on the home page that's accurate. It will show you the handprint of the right-to-work states in Southeast, the United States. Those are the states that have not...
I see it.
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
If anybody's going to that site, the ratifyeraflorida.net, spelled out, if you scroll down, it's a little bit more than halfway down the page. The heading says Equal Rights Amendment, the ERA, and it's right below the video with President Obama signing the Lilly Ledbetter Law. So you'll see the map on the right side. So this, okay, it has it marked blue in blue, not ratified, in white, ratified.
Right, and you'll see the handprint in the south of the right-to-work states. Those are the states that you can be fired for any reason. Doesn't have to make any sense. Always follow the money, and ERA is all about money. And you will also see a few renegade Mormon states. So you can just imagine we're not crazy about any presidential candidate who might be Mormon, especially an official in the Mormon religion, as one of the candidates is. So it says those states are the ones that have not yet ratified, and they're hardened against it. The easy states ratified right away. Hawaii ratified in 30 minutes after it was passed out of Congress. Yeah. I mean, it was a different climate then. Definitely a different climate than it is today. Today, it's open warfare on women. It just is. I can't put it any other way. It's not just about abortion, contraception, but transvaginal ultrasound, anything that will make women's health care, our special kinds of health care, difficult, hard to get, deterring that kind of health care, that's what they will use. Our Congress is doing it, and many, many states are doing it, and Florida is exceptionally strong in that area. The leadership in the legislature, which is the Senate President and the Speaker of the House, both Republicans, unfortunately. Republicans are, and we are nonpartisan, but I must tell you the truth, the Republicans in general, as officials, are dead set, adamant, against any progress for women, and they are eroding the progress we have made as we speak.
When you mentioned the transvaginal issue in regards to abortions, I'm going to tell you right now that anybody that's poor and has no medical care will not be able to have an abortion, if that's the case.
It will stop it right in its tracks. But they were calling it quite sensationally, but actually medically correct, they were calling it legislative rape, because rape has newly been seriously defined as penetration of the vagina against a woman's will. And this has been... not voluntary.
Exactly. It is.
So they backed
off.
They backed off quite sincerely because, the talk show hosts and were joking about, you know, these Neanderthals in Virginia and women. Well, you know that all the congresswomen, particularly the Democrat women, and again, we're not partisan, I'm just telling you, that the Democrat legislators who were women in Congress stood up and walked out.
Well, I remember seeing something last week when Nancy Pelosi was talking about the panel on women's health care that had no men. And I was absolutely infuriated by that. And I think I read that on a Sunday morning, and I had the computer open with my first cup of coffee. And I started putting this out on Twitter and everything, and I'm going, if you want to make decisions about women's health care, you have to have a uterus. And I was just, I put that right on my Twitter. I didn't give a damn. I just put it right on there. I was over that.
We are going to have to do just that. Congratulations, Anita. This is the kind of fight we're fighting. We are fighting really to the death on this. Yeah, I'm beginning to call it femicide. There's a climate to eliminate women and, of course, their rights. It was a panel constructed to eliminate the coverage of contraception from the Affordable Care Act, the President Obama's Health Care Act that will bring so much health care to people who are not now covered, have never been covered, and cannot be covered in this particular climate. So it is a good thing, but they were an all-male, largely Republican committee, did get together to discuss how they could discourage or eliminate contraception from coverage under this Affordable Care Act, and it was made very clear that no woman would be allowed to speak. And in fact, one law student who had a friend who must have take contraception for a totally different reason, ovarian cysts, I think it was, she was denied it and had to have a hysterectomy instead. And she was never allowed to speak. And then when they had to back off and allow her to speak, a week or so later, as the testimony continued, then they decided it could not be televised so that the public could see. And a lot of this, I think, is an abrogation of First Amendment rights for people to hear the discussion on this, free expression by the public and by legislators, both sides. We need to hear what their silly objections are, and we need to hear from our very courageous legislators who will stand up for women's rights to monitor and care for their own bodies. Men get Viagra, no problem. Why should we be under such scrutiny as women?
You know, I couldn't understand that as a licensed medical professional when I would see patients be able to get Viagra or whatever the other designer names
Cialis
and all the rest. Right. And then a poor woman can't go and get a prescription because, number one, she can't afford to go to the doctor. And even if she can go to a free clinic, if that's available to her, then she gets a prescription and goes to the drugstore, and then the drugstore won't fill the prescription for whatever reason. So it's like going round and round.
Insurance didn't cover, for a long time, didn't cover contraception. It was only 1965 that Connecticut, in the Griswold case, finally allowed contraception amongst partners in a marital situation. 1965.
I have never had insurance cover my contraception ever in my whole life.
Well,
or
the
my
irony,
pills
yeah, the
covered
irony is,
by any plan.
And a lot of people had that happen. But Viagra was covered by all insurances immediately.
Right. Exactly.
It still is.
Because it's the men doing the legislating.
Yes.
And they're going to take care of themselves.
There are two answers to this problem. The essence is getting the Equal Rights Amendment passed in the Constitution will make a huge difference on all of these things, even if they're not regulating them directly. And the other thing is to get more than 17% of feminists in office. I don't care whether they're male or female. And those two things must happen before we have real equality. The way it goes now, for example, equal pay, we won't get anything near that and for at least 60 years.
Yeah, and that's another thing. Anytime I've ever worked a job, when I did know what the men were being paid,
mm-hmm.
I was never paid an equal amount.
Mm-mm.
And even when I was military, when I was active duty military, the men were considered, at the time, women couldn't serve in combat positions.
Mm-hmm.
And being deployed or being deployable
mm-hmm.
made a man able to have what was called hazardous duty pay.
Mm-hmm.
Were able to get that, but the women were not.
And not only that, but they got promotions as a result. Military duty bumps you up the food chain in the military
to
a promotion. But even today, I've researched this carefully, and women today are in combat, as you know. There are no front lines anymore, and women, what was not non-combat zone yesterday is in combat today, and women are there. They're driving trucks, and IEDs are flying all around them. But they do get hazard pay now. But promotions are still denied.
Right.
And they're dying with the same kind of red blood the men are. Women are just as patriotic. Women fight just as hard, but even in the military. And in fact, did you know they're not allowed to have an abortion when they're in the military, even with their own funds?
Well, that has changed because I know that took place when I was in, but women had to pay for it. The government would not pay for that. And women had to go out on the economy to get it.
Mm.
So they had to. They could not do that to
medical
doctors.
Tell me, Anita. I don't know if your audience knows, because I don't know. You talk about being a medical person serving in the military. Why don't you tell me just a little bit about yourself in those regards? Because maybe your audience doesn't know that entirely either.
Person in the military. I actually worked in military intelligence.
Mm.
So when I was service, I worked at Strategic Air Command in Omaha, and then I went from there, was stationed, I went to, Intel Tech School, and I was overseas for 3 years. So I spent a little over a year at SAC headquarters, and then another 3 years overseas, and I wasn't deployable to a lot of the missions that I was responsible for, but I did PCS at different times, which meant not PCS. I did TDYs to certain places, which meant temporary
duty. Mm-hmm.
So I was in the Air Force for four and a half years.
That's interesting, Anita. I'm sorry I didn't know that. What about your medical background you're mentioning?
I actually got a CNA license when I was 18 years old, 19 years old, and I had never used it.
Mm.
And there came a time when I was unemployed, I guess it was like around 2002, 2003, and I could not get a job. And it was, of course, right after, Bush came into office. And I realized I was hitting a pretty crucial middle age.
Mm.
And if you want me to be blunt, I was on the tail end of the .com industry, and I was I had also worked in publishing and a few other odd jobs.
That's
and
you.
I was pretty well versed on the internet and being with the .com and working for several different companies.
Certainly.
And what happened was I couldn't get a job. I believe it was definitely because of my age. And when I was interviewed by a younger man, I wouldn't get hired. And I started to realize, if the man doesn't want to screw me, he's not going to hire me. He's going to hire someone young and dumb and pretty.
Mm-hmm.
Then he can pay her less. And then I realized, hey, I have a license I've never used. And at the time, a nurse's license didn't even have to be renewed. You had it, and that was it. You had it, the CNA license. So I went into an agency, just a nursing agency, and I was literally hired on the spot.
Gosh, and tell people what a CNA is. I don't think everyone might
know. Certified Nursing Assistant. Basically, I worked with hospice patients, so I did that from probably 2002, 2003, till just this last October. And I must really say that I kind of got burnt out and needed a break from it. So
It's hard work.
It's really draining, and I took another job that has nothing to do with patient care, and I'm feeling a lot better now. I also worked for two presidential campaigns while I was doing CNA work, and I worked for the Kucinich campaign. I was staff for his campaign and did his virtual outreach in the 2008 campaign, and then. When his campaign had ended, then I started to work for Cynthia McKinney with the Green Party. I was really, I worked for two presidential campaigns, and then I ran my own campaign, Soil and Water Board. I got over 82,000 votes, and I spent less than $300 on my campaign.
Oh, my word.
So I actually applied for a couple of campaigns just recently. They didn't hire me, and they wanted me to. A couple of them wanted me to volunteer, I can't do that anymore.
No, I understand that, and women are particularly thought of as good volunteers, but we pay the men.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Yes, and that's one reason we do not have enough women in politics. In Congress, it's only 17% out of all those men. 17% are women, and not all of those are feminists by any means, but most are. But the point is, the political parties do not support women. That is a very huge part of the problem. They don't think women are electable. I know when I was running for office, I went door to door and people said, "You got my vote, honey."
Right.
I mean, we nurses.
You're bold.
So trusted.
When you get in people's faces and you're bold and you state the issues, they're going to say, and when they meet you face to face, that's the clincher there. Because if they meet you face to face and they get a chance to shake your hand, they'll always say, "I'm going to vote for you. When I get that ballot, I'm going to vote for you."
Well, I think there's something, we come through as quite different from male candidates for the most part, not all of us. But we come through differently. Most women have to be dragged and promoted to get themselves to run. But once we're running, we do it because it's for the common good. We think of families, we think of healthcare, we think of sanitation, we think of we're not in it for greed. I don't know if any of your audience or you, I'm pretty sure you have seen the list of criminal activities that our current Congress people have been indicted and some jailed for. I don't know if that makes the rounds on the internet every now and then. It's astonishing. Wife beating, check kiting, embezzlement, theft, violent behavior, drugs.
We have one gentleman here
running the country.
We have one gentleman here who I won't state who, but I'll tell you on a private phone call who he is.
I know
but
who
his
it is.
Father was, his father was in Congress. He's in Congress, and I can still go online and do a Google search on him and see how he worked with other people to rip off elderly people as far as guardianship, He was actually able to go in to some of these elder people that could no longer make decisions for themselves and steal from them. And this stuff is floating around the internet about this person. And he's, I don't know how many times he's been in Congress. I mean, he's he's in there for, he's like a lifer, like his father. And the big issue is he's never, I don't think he's ever had a bill pass Congress. I don't think he's done crapola.
He's never done anything. Yes, he's never fought for anything. It's the good of the country that's at the heart of most women who run. So if we got more women in office, we would have a better country, a better quality of life. We're not Vestal virgins, that's for sure. We've got frailties as men do, but our general purpose is for the good of the country and the good, the common good, and that's what we need more of. You know that our splendid governor Rick Scott, his company, you know, his company made off with $4.63 billion from Medicare out of your taxpayer pockets, and yet he got elected on your money. He used that money to get elected.
Now, you know there are women running for president. Did you know that?
We have
wonderful, fantastic Jill Stein, and we have wonderful, fantastic Roseanne Barr, both running on the Green Party. And Roseanne Barr is, Jill Stein is a doctor. She's got quite a political background. She's been very, very busy in Massachusetts politics, and a lot of people in New England know who she is. And people are really starting to sit up and take notice about her. Roseanne Barr, on the other hand, at first people thought it was a joke, but I don't think a lot of people know that Roseanne Barr studied feminist politics for many, many years. She's no slouch and she's no dummy. She pretty much fought against the Hollywood hierarchy. She produced her show, she ran her show, she wrote her show, and she directed it. And she had very little help from anybody. And she fought against that Hollywood hierarchy, so that tells me she's no dummy.
No,
you know,
it's just the problem is we can't get the two major parties to support women in the when they're running for office in the way that they support men. That's the nexus of the problem right there.
Well, maybe it's time for a third party. I mean, the two parties have not been doing too hot lately.
No.
Maybe it's time for a third party to get in there and show people how it's done.
We tried to do that, would I say, back in the 80s, late 80s perhaps, and it just didn't get legs. It didn't get legs.
Right.
We must get women to see, for example, right now, with this crackdown on contraceptives, which, you know, just will blow women's minds when they find out. I don't think enough women have found out. But that's the reason we wouldn't even be having this discussion if we had an Equal Rights Amendment.
Right.
Even though ERA itself has no sway over it, does not regulate that sort of thing, it would be seen as impacting negatively 52% of the country, and they're in the Constitution with their full rights to personhood and in the contract with the nation. This would not even be discussed now. So you've got to come along with me. You've got to come along with the three of us, the 5-7 of us states, and you've got to pitch in. You've got to stand up. You've got to give speeches. You've got to let us give speeches. You have to do postcard lobbying. I'll show you how. I'll write your speeches for you. You know, but we must stand up, and we can't just say, that's the way it is. No.
Or somebody else to take care of and not me. And if other people are working on it, I don't need to, you know, expend any energy of my own.
Exactly.
I mean, that happens all the time. It does.
I have 300,000 members, but they're working hard at their jobs. Women carry the world. You know we do. We run the home. We run the family. We run their health care, their nutrition, their other needs, and we go to work. We have two full jobs now, and we're paid 72% of what we should be paid. And that in and of itself puts us behind the eight ball. We must change this climate, and now's the time to do it. Now's the time to stand up and say, put an ERA in the Constitution so that we are given honorable mention alongside our men in the Constitution. It's more than a symbol. It's got practical applications now, and we're seeing that, the ramifications now, because of the proposed ban on contraception, which we never dreamed was going to be threatened. I did, but most women didn't see it. We've got to start reading the newspaper, ladies. We've got to start getting political. We've got to start putting women in legislatures, and we've got to start working on them, to good women, to run for office. Men just walk up and say, well, shucks, I can do that, and then they run for office. Women have to be persuaded. They have to hear from a bunch of us saying, we give you permission to do this. That's what they need. I have actually taken a woman to a meeting, and we discussed on the way whether she should run or not. And when we got home, I locked the car door till she promised she would run. And she did.
Well, I wanted to mention that when, you know, one of the organizations that I'm actually a spokesperson for here in the local area is Move to Amend Tampa Bay, which is an organization to abolish corporate personhood. And when David Cobb did his tour, he's the national spokesperson. He ran for Green Party president in 2004.
Yes.
But he does a fantastic teach-in on this and has been around the country teaching about corporate personhood.
I'd like to hear that.
It's amazing. I'll actually send you some links to some videos he's done. But one of the things that he mentions, because he's very much a feminist male, is that Constitution was really written for 5% of the people, which would have been the men that were landowners.
And white.
Yeah, not slaves, not women. But the 5% of the people that were here in the original colonies were white landowners, slave owners, and of course the wives, the women counted for nothing.
Exactly.
So,
the 14th Amendment is the one that brings up personhood, and there are two parts to it. But the very first sentence begins, "All persons are considered equal," something to that effect. And I have had a senator slam that Constitution in my face, saying, haven't you read this? All persons are already equal. And I backed away and I said, have you read Section 2, where it is obvious this is a men-only amendment? Yes, it was stretched in 1971 for the Reed versus Reed case, but why should we have to stretch an amendment meant for men to cover women? We need our own amendment to the Constitution. It was written, the 14th Amendment about personhood was written in 1868. Do you think things have changed a bit? Sure.
No, yeah, it's exactly. Like, they haven't changed
like
at all.
we had to change the Constitution for slavery to give women the vote. And I am so sick of the one excuse that some legislators use, particularly Representative Ahern and Pisano over on my side in the St. Petersburg, Pinellas County side. They say, well, you know, the Constitution is sacrosanct, and I'm against changing it every time we turn around. And yet, the Republicans, here I go again, I'm sorry, both those men are Republicans, and they are in the legislature of Florida, And they say, you know, just that, you know, we're not going to consider changing it, you know, just for the sake of changing it. They're not looking at the 52% and the cruelty that's involved. And yet, it's the Republicans in this last session who proposed 27 amendments to the U.S. Constitution themselves.
What do you think is happening with the women that are actually sitting in Congress and sitting in Senate, and why none of them have actually championed this cause?
Well, they have. They have, in fact, some of them. I don't know if you know that, you know, I helped mentor the six other states while I run Florida as a lobbyist. I never had any training in it, but I fly by the seat of my pants, and I do that, but I mentor the seven other states. But four of us states got sick and tired of not our House on each of those states not holding a hearing. You know, it binds and gags us. So what we did, we spent 2 years writing a U.S. constitutional resolution, and we got that filed last year, 2011, on International Women's Day by Tammy Baldwin, Representative Tammy Baldwin.
Okay. I've met Tammy Baldwin, actually. Her office is right next to Dennis Kucinich's in the Rayburn building. So I actually got to meet her when I was visiting Dennis.
And I haven't. I've gotten maybe five or eight of our Florida legislators who've moved up to the House of Representatives in Congress, and they have co-sponsored HJ Resolution 47. That's the name of our bill. And, you know, and then there's another bill in Congress that you may know about that everyone knows about. They don't know about our bill because it's so new. Our bill is quite different. It should move the ERA much quicker. There is another bill in Congress, both the House and the Senate. Carolyn Maloney out of New York and Menendez, I see out of New York too, I can't remember. But they filed a bill in each of the houses, and it starts the ERA all over again, which is a lovely idea. But in this climate today, we haven't been able to pass the ERA that was initiated in 1972. How many years ago is that, 40, 50 years? Okay, we haven't even gotten movement on that. And they're starting now to start a new bill all over again that has to come out of Congress. And in this political climate, it would take another at least 50 years for Congress to decide, yes, women should be in the Constitution. Then it would go out to the states to get another 38 states. And in this political climate, it would be even more difficult. So I'm saying those companion bills are fine, and we support them fully. They will take another 100 years to pass, minimum.
Ours
moves it quicker. Well, sure, look at the history. I mean, there's no reason to think they'll speed on any faster. They haven't moved any faster in all the years that the two of them have had these two bills in Congress. So, you know, we're not warring with them by any means. We work with them. It's like Plan A and Plan B. You know, we're happy to have either one pass. But, my God, I don't have another 100 years. I don't know anybody who does. This has got equality under the law for both genders needs to happen right now. Right now. Not when we get around to it. Not later. Some people tell me, why would we do this now that it's the wrong time? It's always the right time to do the right thing, and the right time is right now. Right
exactly.
Now. Exactly. And people have men and women both have to stand up for it.
Right. As far as women running for office, what do you think women who want to run should be focusing and doing right now to prepare, like, say, if they were going to run 2 years?
Yes. Women should be getting, just like the other party did so skillfully all these years, packing the pipeline. Women today are wonderful as politicians. feminist or not, they're generally wonderful. They work for the right kinds of bills, and they work harder than anyone else. They should start, I would say, with the school board. Start with the county commission. Start with the city commission. Get in the pipeline. Look at Marco Rubio. He moved into the Florida legislature as the Speaker of the House, and he became the fair-haired boy. He went right into the U.S. Senate. Now they're talking about him as vice president. This is a span of like 5 years. Women
right.
have got to get a move on. We cannot let men run the country anymore. They've had hundreds of years to make the mess of it they've done. It's time for us to clean up the act. We can do
What do you think about money in politics? What's your take on that?
What do you mean? Can you be more explicit?
Well, you mentioned Marco Rubio, and I agree with you.
Yes.
I mean, his rise was amazing, but I think he had a lot of if he hadn't had the money, he would have been a nobody. I mean, that's just my take on it.
Well, in this particular case, I don't think that fits. The man couldn't manage his money, and yet he made the rise anyway. But he became the fair-haired boy. Immediately, they saw how it did. I don't
giving him money to run. So it's not his money getting his message out there for a campaign.
Right. Yes,
it's corporations' money that are getting him set up to run for office.
Right, the two parties are such drudges. There's, you know, when you look at, aside from President Obama, on either party, but both parties in particular, don't have fresh faces. They don't have articulate people. They don't have wise people. I mean, look at Sarah Palin said she wanted to run because she could see Russia from her front door. You know, I mean, what did she say? China from her front door, some dumb thing. I mean, we have, did you know that all the European countries, their newspapers are laughing at us? Did you know that?
Oh, yeah.
And in fact, the United Kingdom, I think their newspapers said that the candidate running on the other side, you know, the nominees or the presidential candidates, the brains between them make George W. Bush look like a Rhodes Scholar.
Yeah, we are pretty much the laughing stock, and the reason that I think we're the laughing stock is because we keep voting for the people that do the same things to us.
Yeah.
I've got a caller on the line. Let me see if we've got some questions here. I'm going to go ahead and zap them through here and see who this is. Hang on just a second. Hello, caller?
Yes,
hello. Caller? Hi.
Hello.
This is Anita, and I'm on the air with Sandy here. Did you have a question for Sandy?
You say this is Anita?
Yes.
Oh, this is Dave Curtis. How are you?
Hey, Dave. Hi. How are you? Did you
great.
Have a question?
Great. I didn't recognize your voice. You sound great. Listen, I'm 55 years old, and I grew up in New York City. And I remember when I was a kid, the women who were dying, and I was hearing this on TV all the time, they'd gone over the state lines to have an abortion in another state, and they had died from a bad coat hanger abortion, and the doctors, they weren't even doctors 75% of the time, they were just people in these rooms. And,
exactly.
You know, this country, you spoke about the right to vote, but remember, women weren't even allowed to read. We're not even allowed to learn how to read.
Or go to school or own property, even their own
and
property.
And the world of, you know, I remember Staten Island, being that I'm from New York City, Staten Island has a place called Richmond Town, and they have this old schoolhouse, and they used to talk about the forelaser, the guy who stood in front of the class and read, and forelaser means the person who reads in front of. And he would have the cat of nine tails and the various size sticks that he would beat the children with. But what they don't tell you is that four laser means a male. ER, ending with ER, means male.
Yes.
And E-R-I-N-N-E-N means female. So there were no teachers who were female. They were all foreleza, all men. So the women didn't know how to read, and the women weren't teaching. And, you know, it's been my experience throughout my entire life that the men I have dealt with, a lot of cases have treated women like total idiots, and it's bothered me right from the start. And, you know, I'll tell you, first of all, they're saying that the rights that are being given to women in this country are the reason why the Iraqis and the Iranians and the Afghanistan and all of the terrorism is taking place, because the Bible says you're property, you should be obedient, and that if you don't believe that, you're heathens and pagans and non-believers, and that's why they want to nuke us and so forth. There really are so many very stupid men out there, and I can only say, you know, you guys have got a hard time dealing with this in politics and in the general public. And, you know, I don't think they come on as shockingly biased to you personally as they do in conversations that I hear. There are a lot of good men out there, though, who are. You know, but the fact is that there are just so many who are just so stupid. So anyway, keep up the good work, and we can't let this go back to coat hanger days, for sure.
Okay, can I get
thanks,
your email?
David.
Can I get your email from you, Dan?
Sure, m@brooksvillepc.com.
Say it again.
M, the letter M,
uh-huh.
@brooksvillepc.com.
Okay, because I want to be in touch with you. And my email is sandyo@passera.org. And as I say, I've been doing this 12 years. And my husband and I have discussions just like you proposed right now. And he has come to the conclusion that it's hard to say, but up front you don't always see it. But I have had it happen to me. I have taken insults from legislators that you would not believe. I've been run off the road and had death threats, from just such as you mentioned. So I am well aware, and I think we have been kept blind, deaf, and dumb. We have been dumbed down in this country. And so there's not an awful lot of analytical or critical thinking going on anywhere, even in the schools, among most of the people. And so I think this bears on a little bit, but there's a huge, embedded, almost genetic, DNA-esque kind of perception of females.
That may be true. It may be a genetically embedded esque sort of thing. I feel that you may be correct, but I do know that when the Romans crossed the Alps and they looked into Germany, into Germanica, as the Germanica and the Agricola explains, as was written by the Romans, they said that the Germans were amazing because they consulted their women over everything important that they did, including warfare. And that was a complete shock to the Romans. So I think it may be Greco-Roman civilization that's responsible, and not necessarily men in general. It may just be that whole conquer, take over, crush, subjugate, you know, and then regulate and all of that stuff that they do.
Corrales, it's always nice to have an underpaid underclass. For big business, too, if I may say so. But you're absolutely correct. There are several factions going on, several facets to this. And big business has taken that and gone with it. And so have certain religious organizations have gone with it. And both of those people prey on legislators who depend upon funding from those sources. So they're not about to hear the bill, because if it passed, they worry that they will not get funding, campaign funding. And, of course, they don't have to worry about it because big business has to put their lobbying money somewhere, so they don't have to, they really don't have to worry about it. But that's the reason, right from the lips of the leadership in our Florida legislature, that they're afraid of big business. ERA will hurt business. Well, what they really mean is it will hurt their campaign funding. And I want to tell you here and now, there is nothing more important to that crew of legislators up in Tallahassee, most of them. Many of them are great people, but most of them are in it to be reelected. I asked them, what about your mom, your wife, your daughter, your sister? Wouldn't you like them to be fully respected as human beings in the Constitution? Wouldn't you like them to make equal wages? Wouldn't that be good for their psyche as well as their pocketbooks? Do you know what they do? They shrug their shoulders.
Wouldn't it be nice for the children? Because the men have to pay for their children. They have to pay for child support. But guess what? If the woman made more money, maybe they wouldn't quite complain as loudly, and then some of the men will be let off a little bit more.
You got it. You've got a good grasp on this, and I much appreciate your comments, even if they were negative. And I would like to hear some negative statements coming over the phone, because I'm sure there are people out there who are wary of all of this. And in fact, my website has buttons, ERA for men, ERA for women, ERA for the wary, ERA for legislators, in which everything is documented. All the rationales for the ERA are documented on your facts for legislators. And legislators...
You know, I have a beard. I'm all for the ERA because I have a beard, and there's no law that says a woman has to shave her face. So I'm perfectly fine with being equal.
With being unequal?
Equal.
With being equal or unequal?
Equal, because then I don't have to shave.
Yes. Well, you know, I do work just as hard for males. I'm a little disappointed because I don't think men know that they're discriminated against. Men, they did a survey of men, and they weren't certain about what sex discrimination, what defined it. You know, as a separate group that is treated differently and less equitably than the other group. That's sex discrimination. That is discrimination, but in this case, based on sex. Men don't grasp that they are discriminated against, and it's kind of sad to me.
Another reason for why there's no equality. If a guy wanted to show up at work wearing a kilt, I guarantee you he'd be fired.
Oh, sure. Well, he would become a laughing stock.
Well, either way, but even so, they'll fire him.
To an experience I had when I showed up to work on a Friday, worked the whole day, and I was let go on Friday, and on Monday morning, my boss had his new flavor of the month sitting in my desk. Monday at 9 o'clock. She was 20 years younger than me. She didn't have a college education. He was probably paying her less. So that's what happens to women. When they get a certain age, they get replaced by someone younger.
Ooh.
That happens in marriage, but that also happens in the job front as well.
What do you think about that?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, I think, well, first of all, the word discrimination means to tell the difference. It truly does. If you can discriminate between a round peg and a square peg, you've discriminated between a round peg and a square peg, between a yellow round peg and a blue round peg. All discrimination should all be removed. Age discrimination, sex discrimination, all discrimination should be removed. You should just simply be regarded as a human being, as a person. You walk into your office, you walk into your... anywhere you go, and you should simply be, you are either legally a resident, a person, you have got a Social Security card, that's it, you're a person, end of story. And businesses don't have Social Security cards.
Yes, many reasons why and that's, again, the 14th Amendment, that personhood part. Corporations have had for a long time they kind of got a sub rosa pass many the 1800s as persons under the 14th Amendment, and women were chattel, as you mentioned. They were considered possessions of men in 1868, and that's still in place. And now, not only corporations, but fetuses are being proposed as persons, still not females.
Right. Yep. Fetuses have more rights than women.
Yes. Yes. And it could come to pass that they will be, they're struggling to codify the idea that fetuses are persons. And we women are still hung out to dry here. And it's not.
And the sad thing is that before the male-dominated church came along, women were the people who took care of the sick. They were the ones who were the medicine people, and they actually had the herbs and the spices and all of the lore about nature that was able to cure people, and especially in Europe. It may not have been the same in Africa or in other parts of the world, but in Europe it was so, and the women were the ones who were the birthing mothers, the spae wives, and all of the rest. And all of that was taken away, and leeches were used then after the church took over, and the women were burned as witches and so forth. And all of that lore and all of that knowledge and all that wisdom was pushed aside as witchcraft and sorcery and punished.
Yeah, did you know that until 1850, there was no prohibition against abortion until the church moved in?
Yeah, that's just not right.
I believe that because women have always, as we've gone through, you know, ancient history, had the ability to be able to, you know, have their rights over their reproductive cycle. And what we would call abortion today was, as David mentioned, it was done with herbs by the wise ones and the old ones in the olden times. And they were able to do that. And why would something as natural as not being able to feed or clothe or take care of a child, and to be able to remedy that situation out of fear for raising that child with nothing, out of desperation, why would that be made a criminal act?
Look, another way to control.
And of course, you know, like David said about the fetus, you know, having more rights than a human being. And what I don't understand, and I've always been questioned about this, is how can someone be pro-life and be pro-war?
Exactly.
How can that even happen? That doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, you know that you've hit on a very important point, and David, too.
Brilliant.
In terms of this sort of imposed kind of rule, there is no logic. Don't look for logic. This is a strongly emotional thing. And I want to ask David and you, Anita, too, if you would, given what we've discussed, what would you suggest to raise the ire of women? Now, men are irate, too. I have males who co-sponsor my bill. I've had a male Republican sponsor my bills. You know, he lost his favorite chair position and finally got voted out. It's said that they get taken to the woodshed. That's what they tell each other. You vote for this bill, you'll be taken to the woodshed. That means you lose all of your prestigious committees and all of your status until finally you're wiped out politically. That's how strong the admonition is against giving women the right in the Constitution to be a person alongside her man. But I want to ask you, what can you do about getting men and women roused over this? Now, I am, you know, I have stayed steadily aroused over this, and I have told the legislature, You've seen me in your offices. You've seen me in the hallways of the Capitol because I move up there every session and live there and stay in their faces. You're going to keep seeing me there, whether in a wheelchair or on oxygen, because we're going to do this. Every nation since World War II has ERA language. Even Iraq and Afghanistan, women have it in their constitution. George Bush said, we're going to enshrine women's rights there. What are we at home here? Are we chopped liver? What is it that we have ever done that we're pushed to the back of the bus and thrown under the bus? What have we done that is so terrible? It's not that. It's an emotional thing. I want to hear from you. Have you got some suggestions? I speak wherever I'm asked. I just was awarded the Susan B. Anthony Award from the League of Women Voters for my enduring fight for free, for equal treatment of both genders. I mean, but what can we do to rouse the women? They look downcast when I tell them, and their energy is sapped. How can we put it back? How can we get them back on their feet and marching in the streets with me?
That's a good question, and I don't really have any answers for that except maybe to do, I'm just suggesting teach-ins all across the state. This is the other thing I had questions about. What's our next steps? What do we need to do now? Women do this in their local communities?
I have practical things they can do, but my problem is the woman. I'll call somebody, and these are extreme cases, and I'll say, do you have 5 minutes to call your legislator? Here's his number, and here's what the message I want you to leave, because this is very effective. It clogs their office, and it makes them pay attention. The ERA becomes very visible and prominent, okay? But I get the answer, well, my lawn man is coming, or I have to have my hair done.
Well, a call takes like 10 minutes.
Nita?
Go ahead, David. You were going to say something?
You were talking about doing teach-ins and about having education programs, and that's, education is the key to this whole subject. The education system in America is biased to begin with right from the start, right from the first grade, perhaps even from kindergarten forward, and the teachers aren't even aware of what's being done. But if you were to set up tables outside of every Walmart in America and say, please sign this petition against women's suffrage, and then when the women came over and signed up immediately, you'd say to them, here, take this brochure. Women's suffrage is your right to vote. And you haven't even been taught that, and I want you to know that we have some more classes. We can teach you about your rights and what you can do about them to make sure that they're imposed and enforced, and to make sure that your legislatures, the legislature is listening to your voices, and then do it that way. Point out
they're not learning. You're making a pragmatic response, which is great. And you're saying set up tables, and I'm not sure how suffrage fits in, but is it just to get them to sign petitions on the Equal Rights Amendment? Is that kind
just
of
say to them, we're against women's suffrage. Now, the intelligent women will say, how dare you put up such a thing? Women's suffrage is our right to vote.
Mm-hmm.
Those women already know.
Mm-hmm.
And you wink at them and you tell them, listen, we know that. We're reaching the women who don't know, the women who need to know, the women who need to be educated and informed.
Mm. Okay.
And then the women who sign up. Do you say, do you know what you just signed?
Many women are not even, they don't even know where we're at on this. They have no idea.
They don't. And education is the key, but there's another more important pragmatic thing that we must do, and it's easy and it's no cost. But David, you're on the right track, but petitions, I hate to say, don't work if we're getting them to sign.
They're not real petitions.
Oh, okay.
They're not real. Okay. You're not actually going to send these petitions in and say, we're against women voting.
Mm.
They're only to show, to wake up, to shock the awareness of the women who do come over and sign thinking they're actually against women's suffrage when they're not, because they don't know what women's suffrage means.
Okay. Yes. Okay. That's one. All right. That's great. But if I may, it brings me to the pragmatic look that I've had at what we need doing, not how we can get women roused, which I think your idea is a good one, and it could take many flavors and perspectives and be done. But what I'm saying is that what I've just been reading recently about the civil rights laws and the change in the Constitution that was required to rid ourselves of at least slavery, for sure, to codify that in the Constitution.
Yeah.
And the thing that got the civil rights movement moving was publicity. Publicity. Yeah. Because, you know, unless the media speaks out, unless...
Well, this could actually be a publicity stunt as well.
Oh, it is. What you're suggesting is, most definitely. But what I'm driving at is eventually we need the media. And, of course, the media is bought by big business. And the media...
Guess what? Blog Talk Radio, that's media.
Yes, well, that's why I'm here.
we have to be the media because
Half of America
is
on Facebook.
Yes, and we use that too. We have 5 Facebook pages, and we have 300,000 members and 326 major organizations and 7 newspapers and 88% of the public. What we don't have is something to force the legislators to hear the bill. We're just asking, up or down, just hear the bill.
Yes.
So what do we... So we would need to, do we need to lobby? You already have representatives going up to Tallahassee. Are these representatives from the different counties within the state? How do these women get selected to do this?
They're self-selected. I have a heck of a hard time getting people to drive a distance to go and lobby with me. That's one big problem. Now, I go to Tallahassee, and I sit in the gallery, and I watch them, the legislators. You know, there's a whole section of the gallery that's filled with the LGBT group, and I am friends, in fact, with the leader of that group. We're buddies, so we're not in competition. But what I'm saying is the legislature pays attention to them because they come up by the hundreds. I come up by maybe 10 people because the lawn man is coming or because I can't get away. You know, I'm even willing to pay their accommodations while they're up there and pay for meals and transport them. And I can't even get the women in Tallahassee who already live there to come lobby with me.
Do you think a lot of it might have to do with the fact that women are working full-time and they just can't afford to take...
And the other thing is that in the city of Tallahassee, almost everybody works for the government there, the state government. They're afraid for their jobs should they speak up against anything controversial that the reigning party does not like.
So that becomes the big drawback is getting people up there.
Mm-hmm. It does, and I have supported. I raise money by doing garden sales, even though I have 300,000 people. I have never charged dues because I want them on board. You know, as without having to make a sacrifice. But I've decided I made enough sacrifice that now I need support. And I need to put gas in my tanks. And I need accommodations in Tallahassee. I slept on the floor for 4 or 5 years in a hostel, ate in my car. I don't have a lot of money, but I do this because it's the right thing to do, and that right now is the right time to do it. I just need publicity. I need the newspapers reporting on this. I need to move up the Google food chain on the search engines. That's what we need, that kind of thing. The civil rights movement got attention by doing their busing. What can we do to get the attention of the media, unrelenting attention from them? That will do it. And Anita,
now
you've afforded you've afforded one of those legs that'll get us going.
I'll tell you what you can do.
All over the state. Go ahead.
In New York City, in the subway system, I've seen women without shirts on. It is not illegal for a woman to not wear a shirt, as long as she's not doing it provocatively.
Well, in Florida, it is.
Men can do it. And men can do it.
Yes.
But that's sexual discrimination. That is discrimination.
There is a case about that. In Florida, you cannot do that. It's against the law. It's a violation in Florida. But are there other ways? You know, are there other ways to?
The media to report it? I can't think of anything else. So get their attention more quickly.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've been thinking, frankly, when it got to the proper time, and I think now is the proper time. After doing this 12 years and being noble about it, I think it's time we have a tea party, a Tallahassee tea party, and throw tea into the fountain in front of the Capitol. Ride a horse naked around the Capitol with a flag like they did as suffragists saying, how long do we have to wait for equality?
That's
the kind of thing that we need. We need to get arrested. Yeah. I was ready to occupy the Capitol of Florida, the building, and I had it all set up. But the people, I'm 6 hours away from Tallahassee. I was not there. I was relying on the people in Tallahassee. And the wonderful occupiers up there just didn't have the savvy to get signatures. I will show up at 9 o'clock in the morning at the Capitol to do this. They just said, will you show up? Well, college kids will say, sure, but they'll stay asleep. You know, this is a natural phenomenon. And so I wasn't going to drive 6 hours up there. I had appointments with the leadership of the legislature. We were going to occupy the Capitol. And I just could not get the kind of organization that we needed in order to carry this out. I had to, you don't know what I had to do because I don't get appointments with the legislature. You don't have the legislation. People are always saying, well, tell your congressman, tell your legislator. You want to know something? Clearly, they don't want to see you. They have back doors out of their office, so they won't see you. I can't get appointments if I say it's the Equal Rights Amendment. I cannot.
Yeah, they know you're coming.
Sure.
And they'll take off, but that's... But you know what? You just have to show up. I know I have a friend, she lives in Spring Hill. She works with the Green Party, and she lobbied every single Florida congressman up in D.C. in regards to taking the money out of politics. And she went literally to every, she took a week. I think it was a week and a half of her own personal time and went up to D.C. and knocked on every single door. And she came unannounced. She tried to make appointments with some. Some would not make appointments with her. Well, nobody was going to stop her. She went anyway.
I did, too. And I see 160 legislators every year. Every single legislator. Every year. I stay the whole session, 2 months up there. I have a husband with cancer. I leave him to go up there and live there during the 2 months. And I see every legislator, whether it's by stop in, whatever. I go to the office, but their sweet little sweet thing at the front desk has been told, you know, you don't see anybody from the ERA. No, we're not going to do that. So I get to speak to the legislative aide till I'm blue in their face, and they say, well, I haven't talked to him about that. I said, well, will you do that, and will you get back? Oh, certainly. Do they? No. So now what I'm doing is I'm insisting on making telephone appointments. I say it'll only take 5 minutes, but I've been denied an appointment for 3 years, I believe, as a constituent. I need to have a discussion with Senator so-and-so, Representative so-and-so. They don't call me back sometimes. Sometimes they do. Sometimes I actually do get a phone appointment. They'd rather see me by phone than take up 15 minutes in their office. I'll take it. Whatever they'll give me, I'll take.
And I don't blame you there. I know that when the war was going on, they had some of these sit-ins right in congressmen's offices.
They did.
I remember one in particular where Cindy Sheehan and many others, I think it was 40 others, went to, I can't think of his name now. He's from Michigan. Congressman Conyers. They went to his office and staged a sit-in. And they were all arrested. And I'm just wondering if...
That's what we tried to do with the occupation. That was...
I'm just wondering how many people are willing to take the risk to be arrested, because even to be arrested...
Well, they don't have to be arrested. I mean, I'm willing to be out front. I'll take the flak. I'll get arrested. I want to be arrested. It'll get us some media. They don't have to do it. They just have to show up. Showing up, who is it that said showing up is what it's all about?
That, do you believe that that should be the next thing that's done in regards to any happenings in D.C. is the fact that there should be a coordinated effort with possibly local people or ERA activists? And,
well, we need to get the three states first before we go to Washington. We have to get the three states ratified out of the seven now working hard. So my time spent in Washington is really not as productive as it is in Florida and mentoring the six other states. Do you follow that?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, the tack I've been taking. But I have done it.
What is on the agenda for, like, the next 6 months or so? What are your plans?
Oh, my gosh. Do you have half an hour? I can send them to you, but I have a regular schedule. Right now, we're already working hard on 2013. Already.
Okay.
And I am visiting in the summer with their constituents, the targeted legislators, like I do every year. And sometimes I stay, as I mentioned, a couple or more weeks in the area, and I get speaking appointments with all the organizations that seem, willing to engage in the ERA. And we do things like... getting local petitions together, and we tape them together, and we stretch them from the courthouse steps to Main Street for the media to photograph and such. I mean, I'll do just about anything at this point to get the media attention. So I do that. So that's a part of our plan. I continue to make speeches. I've got 4 or 5 in March, which is Women's History Month. And we do rallies. My people do rallies. I have 7 regional directors in Florida. They do rallies, and I speak at colleges. During the summer, I get all kinds of work done. I get speakers, start getting speakers for the fall. It takes me about 6 months to get 67 speakers. I write the speech for 3 minutes before the legislative delegation. I make their appointments. All I have to do is show up and give the speech and go home. And people,
what about is anybody in the state of Florida working on like letters to the editor and actually monitoring?
I will even write the letters. They can pick from a selection of letters. I do it that way. Newspapers will print a letter to the editor about the ERA if they get a bunch of them. I can't get people to do that. I can't get enough people to do that.
Are you actually covered by the media in Tallahassee? Does it, when you're actually up there talking and meeting with the representatives, is the Tallahassee media covering you, and are you being covered outside of the Tallahassee media?
No, they don't. The whole thing is very invisible. It's like I'm invisible. But I do, this is what I do when I sit in on committee meetings and the press is there. I get my card out, and when they're finished interviewing legislators that are there on the committee, a budget committee or whatever, I walk up to them and I say, here's my card. Someday you'll want to interview me. And they always say, what about right now? And I get an interview. We had the ERA featured by Channel 9 several years ago, a whole program devoted to ERA just that way. I walk right up to them and say, "You're going to want to interview me." I'm not.
I think I'm that's not, great.
Yes, and it gets it done. But it's me, you know, and I need a cadre of people. I mean, we need a presence in Tallahassee like nobody's business. That's what we need.
David's still on the line. David, did you have any suggestions of what might be some next steps that we haven't talked about or covered in the past few minutes?
Well, no. I've been out of the room for a few minutes. My mom is 91, and she's wheelchair-bound, and I'm here taking care of her. I'll tell you, the getting those interviews like that is excellent because it gets you the media coverage. And all I can say is that I've done a lot of videos, and I have a lot of video experience and equipment, and that's probably the best thing you can do is document it, have it on YouTube, post it on Facebook, create a group in Facebook, your YouTube channel, and then a blog, and link them all three together so you can get people who see the YouTube videos, who want to become active in what you're doing, and who want to discuss things, and put them on Facebook so they can join the group and discuss things. And then have your blog where you have a weekly video yourself where you talk about what you're doing and what's going on next and what are the best ways to accomplish it. And then they see that, they get ideas from you, and then they discuss it on the Facebook page, and then you post their discussions and parts of what they say and links that they put that are interesting on your blog, and the whole thing turns into this big dynamic. But you got to do it every week. You got to have it on a scheduled basis, so they expect to see it, and then they see it.
Mm-hmm. And I have been doing that. Right now, my blog is incommunicado. As things happen, you know, on blogs, it's right now inaccessible to me. But I am finding my Facebook pages. I have, I think, four of them now. And I have found them to be very useful. It's... David, where are you living, if I may ask? What city, town?
I'm in Hernando in Brooksville, Florida. I'm originally from Manhattan, New York City.
Yeah, I'm from New York, too. I'm Professor Emerita from Adelphi University on Long Island. Okay, so you're in Brooksville. I don't want you to have to give your phone number over the air, so I'll ask you again for your email, because I'd like to be in touch with you if you don't mind.
Why don't I connect the two of you in an email, and that way you'll both have each other's email, and you don't have to repeat it over the air if you don't want to. And I have David's phone number, too. So.
So I wouldn't notice a few hate emails.
What'd you say?
I'm sorry, say that again?
I said I get enough spam emails every day that I probably wouldn't even notice a few dozen hate emails.
Okay, so go ahead with Shall we talk later, Anita, about his phone number and his email?
Yeah, I'll just send you an email with his information. You guys can connect on, you know,
that
email and have your own conversation. But I think David had a very excellent suggestion in regards to getting your information out on YouTube. People tend to watch those videos because if they only have a minute or two watching.
I've been very eager to do that. I just didn't have the capability, but I think David and I could work something up. How's that?
I think so, too. I have a very simple way for you to do it with minimal editing and a very easy way for you to set up a great little studio without having to spend any money. All you'd have to buy is the camera, and I think you can get that for around $90. And that would work terrific for you.
Okay, David, I want to talk to you about that, if you don't mind. I really want to post it on, it would be YouTube, I guess. I'm not a guru on this.
Sure.
But, you know, a webcam or whatever on my site. I'd like to, because all of these people are my friends I've never met. These 300,000 I've only met about, maybe 1,000 of them, and I would like to greet them on our website and on our Facebook pages. I don't like being invisible. You know, I'm a person.
Anita will give you my number. Talk to me later or email me, and I'll let you know what you need to do. And you've got 10 minutes and 37 seconds left, and I think you should really focus on giving it a strong finish.
Okay. All
yeah.
Right.
Well, let's.
Do that.
We talked about what needs to be done next, and I just want to say that I was just honored to have you on the show with us today, Sandy. It was really educational, and I hope that women are listening. I'm going to definitely make sure that there's a button on the blog post so people can listen. It's like it'll look like a little player, so anybody that hits up the blog will be able to automatically listen to the archive there.
Excellent. Now, you don't have the capability of posting a link to my website on your site, do you?
Oh, yeah. Your website is already linked on my blog, but what I'm going to put on the blog is the player so people can go right there and just click. But I don't have any way of putting that player on your site. That's whoever your webmaster is would have to do that.
I have a webmistress.
Yeah, they can go to Blog Talk Radio and just grab the embed code and put it right on your website. So
that
would
be super too. I'm eager to reach out in many, many ways. I'm just one person, but you know, there are people who will do things like this and help out if I can give them directions like that. So they can do I'm working now on getting everyone who's all of my 326 organizations to link, you know, to post a link, because we need SEO on our on the Google search. We need to move up the food chain in Google.
We're going down into the last 2 minutes, so I did want to thank our sponsors, which are Daughters of Isis, Here Be Monsters, Roundtree 7, and the Hoodoo blog. And David, thanks for calling in and offering us some enlightening viewpoints from the male point of view, and also for offering to help, which I think is really going to help Sandy and
that
Equal Rights Amendment information to get out there. That was marvelous for you to offer to help. And I really think that this is going to get done, and I think it's going to be and just the go-get-it-ness. We've got to get more women involved, but I think when it becomes a major issue,
we've got to get them energized.
Yeah, and energized with these drawbacks regarding rights. That's put this. It's going to put this issue up to the forefront. I really believe that. So
I appreciate
Sandy
being
and
here.
David, good night, and thank you very much for being on the show. And for everybody, go to wisewomenmedia.posteris.com or wisewomenmedia.blogspot.com. I'll put the player on each blog, and you'll be able to listen to the archive if you weren't able to hear the whole show tonight.
Yes.
So good night to everyone, and we'll see you next Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Thanks from Wise Women Media Radio Show. Thanks.
Thank you.
Good night.
Night.
Good night. Night.